They are seeing themselves in a situation where they're beginning to feel encircled politically and diplomatically.
Another nuclear test may be brewing in North Korea. It's Thursday, March 30th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us as well online at VOA Asia on Facebook. Also ahead, a Taiwan resident under investigation in China, an award for speaking out in Vietnam, shutting down China's ivory trade, and we go inside India's miniature lab in space. It all starts now on VOA Asia. A U.S. think tank said recent satellite imagery suggests North Korea is preparing another nuclear test. 38 North, a website operated by the Washington-based U.S.-Korea Institute, said pictures taken March 25th showed the presence of vehicles or equipment trailers at the Punggye Renuclear Test Site, along with possible communication cables and water pumping to keep the North Portal dry. But the website said the timing of a sixth nuclear test remains uncertain, and it said the lack of activity elsewhere at the site also suggests test preparations are in their final stages. It's a worrisome development, said Cedric Layton, a former U.S. Air Force intelligence officer who operates his own strategic risk and leadership management consultancy. He spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty.
Anytime that you see this kind of preparation at a sensitive facility in a country like North Korea, especially this facility at Punggye Ri, that is really an indication that something is going on. There are two possibilities here in my mind. One, that they're actually going to do a test, or number two, that they're going through the preparations for a test, practicing the way a test would run. So it's either a dry run or it's the actual test.
We've seen an uptick in nuclear and missile activity in North Korea in recent weeks.
And the reason we've seen this uptick is because if you look at the overall geopolitical landscape that North Korea finds itself in, they're looking at the U.S. and South Korea conducting major exercises, the full legal exercises right on their border, basically, looking at Secretary of State Tillerson coming in essence, bringing out the possibility of increased and enhanced sanctions against North Korea. They are seeing themselves in a situation where they're beginning to feel encircled politically and diplomatically. And their way of dealing with that is to show the power of North Korea, of the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, and they show that power in several ways, but one of the easiest ways for them to do this is to have a nuclear test in conjunction with their rocket engine tests, which they've conducted over these past weeks as well.
Another 38 North report said recent satellite images of the Nuclear Research Center at Yongbyon showed rail and vehicle movements that could indicate a plan to resume reprocessing of spent fuel rods to produce plutonium for bomb fuel.
And anytime you see activity in a facility like that, what you're looking at is the possibility not only of spent bomb fuel being used as another fuel type, but you're also looking at ways in which they can sustain their current operations. The more production they have at that facility, the more likely they're going to be to use it, the more likely they're going to be to test their weapons, and the more likely we can see activities in not only the East Sea, as they call the Sea of Japan, but also all around North Korea.
U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner called Pyongyang a clear and present danger. He said it cannot be allowed more time and space. He said its efforts to develop a nuclear capability and ways to deliver it is a danger and needs to be addressed. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Facebook page, VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. A report says North Korea is increasing activity at nuclear test site. Afghan governor says U.S. Marines deployment will reverse Taliban gains. China confirms detention of Taiwanese pro-democracy activist. Myanmar voters get to judge economic success in by-election. Pakistan halts extradition of a U.S. man accused of terror plot. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more is found on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. We continue now with VOA Asia. China on Wednesday said Taiwan resident Yi Ming-chu is under investigation on suspicion of endangering national security. A spokesman for the Taiwan Affairs Office of the State Council said further developments will be discussed in a timely manner. He said Li's health is good and added the legitimate rights of Taiwan residents who come to the mainland to conduct normal activities are protected. Li was last seen entering the mainland from Macau on March 19th. The president of Taipei College, where the 42-year-old Li works, said he may have attracted the attention of Chinese security after using social media to teach about China-Taiwan relations. University of Hawaii Taiwan expert Bill Sharp tells VOA his decision to visit the mainland is puzzling.
This gentleman was, how should I say, proselytizing. He was telling everybody about Taiwan and how it became democratized. These are very sensitive areas in China. Anything that deals with Taiwan is very, very sensitive, and anything that deals with democracy and advocating democracy is perhaps even more sensitive. When you put the two together, democratization of Taiwan, and China claims that Taiwan is a Chinese province, he was skating on some pretty thin ice there. In a way, I'm not surprised that he got in trouble for that. Also, the fact that he is aligned with the Democratic Progressive Party, which the Chinese authorities have great difficulty with, you know, a completely different philosophy. This would automatically make him suspect in their eyes.
Apparently, according to colleagues, Li used WeChat, social media, to teach people about China-Taiwan relations under the government of President Tsai Ing-wen.
Millions of people use it. It's extremely popular. And I also would think that it's a bit, from his perspective, a bit insecure because it's something the Chinese government can easily monitor. And everyone knows that the Chinese government monitors all kinds of social media.
Well, if he knew that, why would he go to China and risk arrest?
I would question that, too. I mean, I make this analogy or this comparison. It's almost like a South Korean missionary crossing into North Korea from China and then passing out Bibles and kind of wondering why he got in trouble. It's obvious doing something like this that the Chinese government will become quite upset. People in China don't really know that much about Taiwan. Taiwan is a great success story, and it's not something that the government of China likes people to know about.
Li's wife, Li Qingyu, said her husband has high blood pressure and no medication, so his health could suffer. She also acknowledged she and her husband have been human rights advocates, but insisted her husband had committed no criminal acts. Bill Sharp says his detention reminds him of instances in recent months where Spain, Armenia, Kenya, and Cambodia were pressured by Beijing to send Taiwan citizens accused of telecom fraud to the mainland rather than to Taiwan. He said it is a way that China intimidates Taiwan, which regards it as a renegade province. Happening now in Asia, India's home minister has reaffirmed intent to completely shut its borders with Pakistan and Bangladesh. The government says around 90% of the border is currently fenced, but India says there are still terrorists trying to infiltrate the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department has awarded a detained Vietnamese blogger the International Women of Courage Award. The outspoken activist Nguyen Ngoc Quyen is known to her followers as Mother Mushroom and is currently detained in prison in Vietnam. She was detained last year for allegedly distorting the truth and spreading propaganda against the state of Vietnam. Quyen was recognized in absentia Wednesday in Washington. She is recognized for her, quote, bravery for raising civil society issues, inspiring peaceful change, calling for greater government transparency and access to fundamental human rights, and for being a voice for the freedom of expression. VOA Vietnamese reporter Trung Nguyen has been following the story, and he spoke with two other activists, one who was honored with the same award while she was in prison in 2012.
The activist is very well known in Vietnam, and she has been imprisoned for a few months since last year for allegedly committing anti-state propaganda. But some human rights organizations and even the U.S. government criticized Vietnam for imprisoning her for speaking out against the government, for raising social issues like the mass environmental disaster in a few provinces in Vietnam, the Formosa case where millions of fish were killed. So she has been in prison. It is not the first time she was imprisoned for what the Vietnamese government say anti-state activities.
Mm.
Her mom is now taking care of her two young children, Mother Mushroom, that's what she called herself on social media. Her real name is actually Nguyễn Thị Như Quỳnh.
And I'm sure people are speaking out about this.
Yes, especially those who are activists inside Vietnam, because raising awareness, raising political opinions and speaking out against the government or making opposition statements in Vietnam is quite risky, actually, because that one state government and all the media and all the press are under control by the government. So it's quite a big news among those who have done activities to have democratized Vietnam, have been very happy, and they received the news eagerly. I talked to a social activist, Bùi Thị Minh Hằng, about Mother Mushroom, the recipient and the award, and this is what she has to say to me earlier.
It was a huge spiritual boost, as I knew that I was not alone in my fight for basic rights for the Vietnamese. Of course, I was lonely in the prison, but the outside world still paid attention to me.
Activists here can say quite a bit about the issue. Activists in Vietnam who are commenting on this are at risk themselves.
Yes, and actually, another activist who was imprisoned in Vietnam back in 2013, she was honored with the same award as well. Mm-hmm. And she's a former policewoman. That is very interesting about her. Mm-hmm. She was a former policewoman. She was a member of the party, the Communist Party. But after she spoke out against some of the policies by the government, she was imprisoned and she was honored with the same award. And her name is blogger Tạ Phong Thanh. That is what she has to say about the award that she was received.
It is a great and timely encouragement. Anybody, whether it is Quinn or somebody else, who dares to stand up for the truth in the bad regime like Vietnam is brave.
The activists say that they are encouraged and inspired by this award, the International Woman of Courage Award that is given by the U.S. Secretary of State. What inspires them? Is it the fact that the United States recognizes them for speaking out and free speech?
Yeah, that's right. They think that the U.S. is paying attention to them, to the difficulties they are experiencing inside Vietnam. They think that they fight has been recognized in a good way. And especially for Mother Mushroom and other activists think that it's a great boost to her when she hears the news about the award and what she has been recognized in the U.S. for what she did that put her in the prison.
A very fascinating story. Trung Nguyen, thank you so much from our Vietnamese service.
Thank you, Jim, as always.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Students at the American University of Afghanistan are back in class 7 months after a deadly attack that had killed 13 people, including 7 students, 3 police officers, 2 security guards, and a doorman. 30 students were injured in the attack, for which no group has claimed responsibility. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia.
We continue now as China is preparing to shut down ivory factories on Friday. It's the first phase of the government's plan to end all domestic ivory trade this year. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi as the Kenyan conservation group Save the Elephants says that commitment has already had some impact.
Save the Elephants says the wholesale price of ivory in China dropped up to 60% in the last 3 years. The Nairobi-based conservation group says in 2014, a tusk sold wholesale for $2,100 per kilogram. In February of this year, an ivory tusk was sold at $700 per kilogram. Save the Elephants researcher Esmond Martin did the study, which was released Wednesday in Nairobi.
The government of China announced in December last year, 2016, that they were going to close down the ivory factories, the legal ones, and the legal shops. And so what we found was that many of the shops now are diversifying, getting out of ivory, moving into mammoth or other materials.
He says raw ivory sellers have been racing against time and offering lower prices to sell off their remaining stocks. Ivory sales, jewelry and trinkets are popular in China. According to the Global Monitoring System, known as the Elephants Trade Information System, China is by far the largest importer and consumer of ivory in the world. But the founder of Save the Elephants, Ian Douglas Hamilton, says public education campaigns in China are starting to bear fruit.
If you go back beyond that, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, people in China were unaware that if they bought ivory, it would cause the killing of elephants. And there's been a lot of campaigning with Chinese celebrities in which Save the Elephants has taken part to change that mindset.
Tens of thousands of elephants have been killed in recent years for their tusks. The recent Great Elephant Census showed a 30% decline in African savannah elephants between 2007 and 2014. China's decision to ban domestic ivory trade by the end of 2017 was hailed by conservationists. Whether the new policy will reduce poaching remains to be seen. Martin says China must also crack down on illegal trade.
And there are over a million Chinese now living in Africa, and they're buying a lot of ivory retail from big markets in Luanda, in Lagos, in Cairo, Khartoum and other places, and they're 90% of the buyers, and they're bringing that back to China. And they're also buying ivory, which is much cheaper, from their neighboring countries, such as Vietnam, Laos, and Burma.
Last year, Save the Elephants released a report that Chinese ivory buyers are purchasing the product in Vietnam. The group noted in the last decade, the number of ivory items for sale in Vietnam had increased by more than six times. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Developing at this hour in Asia, an FBI officer says last year's $81 million theft from the Bangladesh Central Bank's account at the New York Federal Reserve was state-sponsored. Federal prosecutors are investigating North Korea's possible role in the heist that used the SWIFT bank messaging network. VOA Asia keeps you informed on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a tiny satellite launched by India is circling the Earth, and it contains a laboratory that's only the size of a tissue box. VOA's Deborah Block tells us the lab is helping scientists carry out experiments that range from finding ways to improve pharmaceuticals to perfecting the foam in coffee.
An orbiting mini-lab is a new way for researchers to work in space. With little interference from Earth's gravity, cells and molecules behave differently. That helps researchers make discoveries in fields from medicine to agriculture. Usually such experiments are conducted at the International Space Station or on parabolic airplane flights that have short bursts of weightlessness. Developed by an Israeli-Swiss firm called Space Pharma, the satellite mini-lab opens up new frontiers for research.
Space Pharma provides the first ever designed, launch, and commercial satellite laboratory that now is available for many clients wherever they are in order to be able them to run their own designed experiment in microgravity. And this is the new technology that we are now proposing to the market in order to develop better drugs, better medicines, better research, and better products for humanity.
He explains how clients can remotely control scientific experiments anywhere from Earth.
We are installing the software in the client location within his computer. He is playing with the parameters to build his sequencing of steps and how he would like to run the experiment.
The clients receive data and images from the experiment, which can be run multiple times to test different reactions. Right now, the satellite contains 4 experiments. Next year, Space Pharma hopes to send up satellites that each can hold about 160 experiments. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Time for us to splash down on Earth. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to check us out on Facebook if you haven't already at VOA Asia. We're also a podcast. Feel free to download it anytime and listen to VOA Asia wherever you happen to go. Our thanks to director Tracy Carter and engineer Jim Harmon. Our managing editor is Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. We have interns as well, Anying Guo and Michelle Cheatham. Thanks for all your great efforts. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a super day today. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Human rights abuses continue to be a serious problem in Russia, according to the latest State Department Human Rights Report. The continuing occupation and so-called annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula affects the human rights situation significantly and negatively. The Russian government continued to train, equip, and supply pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine, who were joined by numerous fighters from Russia. Credible observers attributed thousands of civilian deaths and injuries, as well as widespread abuses, to Russian-backed separatists in Ukraine's Donbas region and to Russian occupation authorities in Crimea. Russian authorities also conducted politically motivated arrests, detentions, and trials of Ukrainian citizens in Russia, many of whom claimed to have been tortured. Human rights groups asserted that numerous Ukrainian citizens remained in Russia as political prisoners. Within Russia itself, authorities restricted citizens' ability to choose their government through free and fair elections, and increasingly instituted a range of measures to suppress dissent. The government of President Vladimir Putin passed repressive laws and selectively employed existing ones to harass, discredit, prosecute, imprison, detain, fine, and suppress individuals and organizations critical of the government. Amendments to anti-terrorism laws granted Russian authorities additional powers that were also used to suppress and harass activists and critics of Mr. Putin's policies. Authorities especially targeted individuals and organizations that professed support for the government of Ukraine or opposed the Russian government's activities in Ukraine. The Russian government continued to target civil society. According to the Human Rights Report, authorities further stymied the work of non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, through the Foreign Agents and Undesirable Foreign Organization laws. Authorities also significantly expanded the definition of political activities to bring more NGOs under the foreign agents category. Authorities began fining NGOs for not disclosing foreign agent status, while courts closed NGOs for violations involving the foreign agents list. Under the expanded definition of political activities, authorities added environmental and HIV prevention organizations to the list. Promoting human rights and democratic governance is a core element of U.S. foreign policy, said U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The human rights reports demonstrate the United States' unwavering commitment to advancing liberty, human dignity, and global prosperity around the world, including in Russia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.